Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
The inauguration of Donald Trump poses some interesting and important challenges for your favorite podcast, The Chicago Way. So many liberals, yes, including journalists, are weeping and gnashing their teeth, hysterical. They're caught in a loop of rage, and they can't get out. They've locked the door to their own hell from the inside. Just read a newspaper or listen to a broadcast, and you can hear the fear. You can hear the whining. It's there, in between the lines. Now, I don't have any Prozac to give out or any drugs but whiskey, and I'm not going to waste my whiskey on that. I'm going to save it for myself, but I will hand out copies of the Constitution to comfort them. Still, we have to do something, so I think it's time to launch the John Cass, Scott Stannis, Christian McQuarrie Take a Liberal to Lunch Day and Hear Them Whine. Chicago Way host Jeff Carlin says he'll choose a needy liberal and will fill them with comfort foods and soothe their pain. In the meantime, there's so much to talk about. We're going to have Tom Bevan, founder and editor of Real Clear Politics, to discuss the future of journalism and the terrified political establishment. And the great Chicago Tribune editorial cartoonist and my friend, Scott Stannis, joins us to talk this out. All right, last week, the Obama Department of Justice rushed their study of Chicago cop culture and held a dog and pony show to help Rahm face his reelection campaign. There are bad actors everywhere among cops, reporters, politicians, teachers, clergy, so I'm not condoning bad actors, but who made the Chicago cop culture? It wasn't cops. Al Capone begat Mayor Big Bill Thompson, who was going to punch King of England in the nose, and later Paul Rica enabled the Kelly Nash machine, and they dumped Martin Cannelli over his opposition to black policy wheels, and then Daley was begat politically. And lo, after many years, Daley begat Bolandic, and Bolandic begat Byrne, and Byrne begat Washington, and Washington begat Sawyer, and Sawyer begat Daley. And lo, after many years, Daley and Obama got together in some sort of weird scientific experiment involving test tubes and begat Rahm Emanuel as mayor. And you think Chicago cops did all this? Scott Stannis, I ask you. Who created the Chicago cop culture?
Oh, I think the city, there's no question the city did. The politicians, I mean, but this isn't unique to Chicago either, by the way. The idea of, we're going to police over here, we're going to keep those people, I'm winking at you right
Watch
now.
Watch it, yeah.
We're going to keep them here, we're going to keep the bad guys there.
Right.
And
over on your side of the viaduct, right,
yes.
Jeff Carlin?
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's how the cities work, and that's how this has worked for a long, long time, right?
Jeff Carlin, what did you make of the... I know it happened a while ago, but it's still in the important story to me because Loretta Lynch, you know, still glowing from her tarmac visit with Bill Clinton while Hillary was under federal investigation.
He felt her pain.
Yeah.
In her breasts.
She talked. Boy. There he goes again. Talked.
Scott Stannis, the Chicago Tribune.
Not me, not Jeff. And she talked about how great Rahm was and how important it was. To me, it was like a dog and pony show about Rahm.
Yeah, I don't even know. It was.
Don't point fingers, he said. I'm not really against Rahm here.
No.
I'm just trying to point out one thing we do on the Chicago Way is cut through.
Right. I just want to say it for the record. I cannot listen to to Rahm Emanuel's story about his grandfather one more freaking time. I'm sorry. He keeps rolling that out. I get it. We get it.
You're an immigrant, too?
Yeah, you're an immigrant. I get it. Yeah. Congratulations. You know,
Mayor Zorro?
Yeah, exactly. Just
right.
just put a cork in it. We've heard it already.
Alcalde.
Yeah, exactly.
Zorro.
But you're right. I mean, it was such a dog and pony show. I felt like I was watching, hey, let's pat ourselves on the back. Chicago's already done some great things, but we need to do more.
Scott?
It's unseemly that the Attorney General of the United States of America does a presser with a politician to... She has been beyond belief. There's no precedent for what's going on right now. I mean, the wheels have come off of everything I knew to be right and proper.
Well, that's what happens in times of great change, and we're facing that now. We'll talk about that later with our friend Tom Bevan. You know, the big change is coming. The barbarian is at the establishment gates, and many people are so worried about it. But I have something to ask you, Mr. Stanis.
Yes, sir.
I think we talked about this before. I think it's time to take a liberal to lunch day. I do. I not even a journalist.
Well, can you unfold them out of the fetal position? Because they're in the corner.
Jeff.
Why are you looking at me?
Come on. I read Facebook. I can see the little eggs.
I'd like an example.
I don't know. I did read on Facebook, not involving Jeff. But I have seen some colleagues on Facebook, so that's somehow their private domain because they're not publicly held accountable
Facebook
for anything.
Is private.
Except for me. I'm the one who's held accountable. Is they want to have a collective. They want to have all journalists get together and fight Trump as if they haven't been doing that already.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering if we should take not journalists to lunch because the last thing I want to do is have a couple drinks with a journalist, except unless it's you, Scott.
Oh, thanks, man.
And Jeff. Or Roe, or Anna, but...
Or Kristen McQuarrie.
Kristen McQuarrie, for sure, with oysters. And a nice... we had oysters the other day.
Nice
and you blew it, Jeff Carlin. You missed
that. Sorry.
So I'm just wondering, should we take a liberal to lunch? Because maybe Jeff could pick the liberal.
I can pick the liberal?
Yeah, maybe. Could you?
We could have sure. Yeah,
what's your email, Jeff?
Let's not do that.
How should they notify?
You can find me on Twitter, Facebook. I will. If you want to nominate a liberal for John to take to lunch, I'm up. All about working.
Right,
this.
Jeff, you'll work it out.
Yeah, absolutely.
A liberal to somebody like a real hard ass liberal too, like a Mike Klomsky.
There you go.
Somebody like that. Guys like that,
Noam
can really
Chomsky
get along
would be
with.
Fun.
There's something, though, before we move on to the, or past the liberals to lunch day.
Yeah.
Take them to the circus.
Oh, boy. What do we make of?
I guess all those elephant lovers are happy.
Yeah, that's
you know what would be nice now?
That's
to
sad.
Go to Baraboo, Wisconsin.
Home. Oh, I love
it. Right? That's where Betty and I had our first, extended date.
Ooh.
Because I was making $150 a week.
Oh, living large, man.
Yeah, and we thought we'd get a cabin and walk around and do fall colors, and I was trying to do it on the cheap. So we ended up in a cabin that smelled of pine saw.
Nice.
Nothing says romance.
And it was raining, and we watched the Boom Boom Mancini Dooku Kim fight.
Whoa.
Boom Boom kills the guy.
Yeah.
And that's and Betty starts crying. That's how the whole... Then we went for pie. Jeff, you being a pie guy, we went for pie to try to make up for the fact that the guy was dead. No, it was an apple pie, Wisconsin.
Good.
And it was like we were the only two customers in this big restaurant that's jammed in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, could I have some cheese on that pie? And she looked at me like, cheese on a pie?
Wait, I thought that was...
And I thought, whoa, this is the Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
I thought that was a state law in Wisconsin. I'm dead serious. I thought that was a state law that you must serve a slice of cheddar cheese with apple pie.
She looked at us weirdly. That's the home of... Isn't Baraboo, Wisconsin?
Yep, the home of
the Ringling Brothers.
Ringling Brothers and
the Winter Quarters, which is bizarre given that it's, Wisconsin.
I thought it was summer.
Yeah.
Wait, how is it Winter Quarters? Do they have tiny little
houses
for the little tiny people?
I think they have normal-sized houses for everybody.
Oh.
But they summer, their season's only like May through, the end of the year.
And they need to pick blueberries too, right?
Exactly. And they need to train. They also work on their routines.
So what did you want to get to that I took us off?
Oh, well, I was just going to get to the fact that our Loretta Lynch lying on TV.
Okay, here's what she did.
Which
Loretta
time?
Lynch, Jeff and I independently verified at the last question, she was asked what, Jeff?
She was asked why former Chicago superintendent of police Gary McCarthy was not interviewed for a report on best practices that he implemented. Well, not entirely him, but he had implemented the most recent set of best practices.
Correct.
When this investigation had begun, and why he was not interviewed for such
a report. Jeff texted him, and so did I. We didn't two great minds think alike. Immediately, I texted him, and he responds by saying, "That's a lie." And to you too, right?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I asked him, what's your response to that question?
That she said, he was not available.
Right.
We tried to get him, but he was unavailable. Right.
It's a lie. Print it, essentially.
Print it. Yeah, he did say print it.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I was befuddled by that. I mean, why we would even, you know, even that question was coming up. There's no way it was like, oh, it caught her by surprise.
She's gone. By the time people hear this podcast, she's already out the door.
That's true. She's already
sitting there with Bill Clinton on the tarmac talking about their grandchildren in the golf.
But yeah, I mean, it's true. But it's just a blatant disregard for just anything. I mean, for us, the people, the citizens of this country.
One progressive that I like a few. I married one and a couple. Is Scott Walksbeck of the Chicago City Council. Stacy Sinclair and Jeff Cohen of the Tribune had a good story this week, Scott.
Yeah, apparently.
About the progressive caucus wanting a federal investigation into Rahm's law department.
Yeah, yeah, they listen to you. Apparently you're now the leader.
I don't think so.
The pejorative leader.
Yeah, that's me, Mr. Progressive. Who sat on that video, Scott Stannis?
Oh,
the Laquan McDonald video.
Well, we all know who sat on that for 10 friggin' months so he could get reelected. But I'm not pointing fingers.
And you know what? The coverage of this, that's why I wrote the column. All right, Sonny, what can you do? Can I rant on something else?
Yes, please.
That has nothing to do with politics, but kind of.
Really?
All right. I'm in the market for a car. Scott Stannis does not have a car.
I don't.
He doesn't have a car because he's like so urban. Yeah. Jeff, do you have a car?
I do.
But you don't drive it?
Not much. Just from my home to Tribune Tower, pretty much.
All right. I'm in the market for a car.
What are you looking for? Here's the
problem. Here's the problem, boy. Chevy, the Chevy guy. You know that little wimpy Chevy guy with the elevator of cars and the real life people?
Yeah, the hipster guy.
Yeah, I hate that guy. I'd like to kick him in his special purpose, I swear to God. I would not even buy it. I want to have Mayhem guy from Allstate kick his ass.
Wouldn't you love to see
a cage match? Two men enter, one man leave.
I want to see a fight between him and the onesie guy from Obamacare.
You're Pajama Boy?
Yeah.
Yeah, but let's stay with the cars for a second, okay?
You
have the Chevy guy, like, oh, and there's real people, and all the real people wear cool clothes, like just real, you know, when they're at the mall. No stupid T-shirts or anything or flip-flops. They're all well-dressed. There's another one. Then what about, so I can't buy a Chevy because the guy makes that little wimp makes me hate Camaros, for God's sake. And then... You've got the government, what is it called? The government motors? Government motors?
Yeah.
Because we spent how many billions of dollars saving their
just
ass?
A few.
Right? And they have a commercial where there's like, it's like pre-Hillary. So they all thought Hillary was going to win. So you have a commercial where there's like some president of an NGO or a government lawyer living in like large in Virginia, right? Some government bureaucrat. And they just bought something cool, and they asked their neighbor who just went to Walmart and is kind of befuddled and, like me, looks like a fat guy that's uncool. And the fat guy that's uncool says, I got a good deal on this plastic stuff that's whatever it is, or weights or something. And the other guy goes, and he's in a perfect, like, Orvis jacket, like a barber jacket or something. And he says, well, I got a deal on this. And he clicks his little GMC truck thing, like
remote starts.
That's another one that needs a kick in the special purpose. So I can't buy those. Then I
love that you build out this backstory on all these people.
I hate it. Is advertising not politics?
Absolutely.
Let's admit. Then there's the guy. Then there's Cat Stevens with the Jeeps and Bob Dylan songs with some other car, Subaru or Jeeps or something. And then I can't. Take their preciousness anymore. It's just so precious. All I want is a car, damn you.
What do you want?
I don't want your damn bearded little wimp with your J.D. Powers telling me that these are wonderful. And then you have the big elevator of cars going up and up and up. And then the guy says, the real people go, impressive, wow. But really what they're talking about is a stupid idea of having all these cars and trucks on an elevator on chains. They're looking at it going, whoa, this is weird. And they cut it to make it look like you're talking about the fact that some idiots saw a Malibu and thought it was a BMW. Now, save me from myself because I want to kill somebody.
What do you want? What do you want? Okay, here's the thing.
I don't really want to kill
you should get a truck. Two, it should be dirty. Three,
Get her done.
There should always be something in the bed of the truck. Always.
Like what? Like
tire?
Wood?
Like the severed hands of my last victim or what?
No.
Well, that would count.
If I were a serial killer of all these spokesmen.
Right. If you were going around collecting spokesmen's heads as trophies.
Right. The thing is, I can't take it Cat Stevens is doing a car commercial. I can't take it. I can't.
Why?
I can't
deal with that. Because Cat Stevens now is a devout Muslim who
that
actually
has nothing to do. I really don't
jihad
care
is okay.
What I don't know about that, but I really don't care if people want to celebrate the and worship the Lord of their choice. If that's their business, I'm an American. I'm not judging.
So, what,
but I will judge
Cat Stevens selling cars
on the cars like Bob Dylan. And the seas will stand to your whatever he's singing. And I'm thinking, this is a Jeep? Really? Bob Dylan selling Jeeps?
You don't want a guy who's a Nobel Prize winning musician
didn't
singing
even show
about your
up
car?
For awards.
I know.
I saw that movie.
Oh, the
Rogue One?
What'd you think?
Oh,
it's
Rogue One.
Unbelievably
yeah.
good.
Yeah. yeah.
But I saw another one that I want to talk to you about.
Okay.
There's not, in this movie, there's not a guy with muscles who kills 1,000 men. Okay. So it's not Jamie Foxx or John Wick, Keanu Reeves. It's not Jamie Foxx like, I've got to get my son and I've got a shotgun and I'll blow your head off. None of that. This is a movie about three smart ladies.
Oh, yeah.
African-American ladies called Hidden Figures. I saw that movie with Betty. I loved it so much. If I were the king of American education, I would mandate that every child, let's say from third grade on, watch this movie in school and discuss it.
No, my wife and I were screening because I'm in SAG-AFTRA, and so we get to vote on those things. And we watched it. We've kind of been binging.
Yeah, Scott's fills a quota for them.
What
yes. SAG-AFTRA?
Yes.
You know, I was going to join. I never got to. I kind of joined.
Well,
you
don't get the free screeners then.
I know.
Kind of anyway, but we saw the film. Here's a question. Someone wrote a fascinating column. I can't remember who wrote it, but you can Google just this phrase. Is math the language of God? And have we? And have
I don't know. You have to ask Isaac Asimov.
No, but think about what. think about this for a moment. I mean, everything in the so far, everything in the world, everything in the universe, everything in the galaxy is explained with math. And so these three women, who happen to be African American and happen to be blessed with the ability to understand and actually and theoretical math,
right,
which is far beyond. Believe me, I went into cartooning because art majors, there was no math involved.
Right. That's why I went into journalism. I kind of flunked out of engineering
so
school.
So the performances are phenomenal.
Right.
And just the idea.
What
that,
a story, huh?
Oh my gosh. What a story. And John Glenn actually, that's the one line that some of it, they kept fairly close to the truth. Obviously, there's amalgam of characters that kind of compressed and so on. But for the most part, but Glenn did ask
the Kevin
smart
Costner,
girl.
The John Kevin Glenn, Costner, white guy, enabler
yes.
guy.
Again, he was an amalgam of three guys who, but he did promote these women and they did desegregate this, Nassau in Virginia. And what a great story. And Glenn did ask, say, get the smart girl. I want her to look at the number. And that was her.
There's no killing in it. There's love in it, but there's no sex in it. There's respect in it. There's respect for learning in it. There's respect for children who have the capacity to think outside the box in it. I don't know if our public education system can do this now, but then they did. And these children, these young ladies who were gifted, clearly. Now everybody with six-figure income has a gifted child. You know how that works, right?
Yeah.
They just write the check. Okay, yeah, your kid's gifted. Here, give me some money. But then to go from a small, impoverished, black-only town and take your child to another city where your daughter can learn, and the message that was sent out by just that act speaks to a lot of things like school choice for me. Why did I become a conservative? Partly because of the inherent racism of institutions like schools. Not the black-white issues, which are easy race cards, but the bigotry of low expectations.
No, what W called it the soft bigotry of low expectations.
He was right there.
Yeah, of course he was
right there. And this movie, if you have a child or not, you have to see it. It is that, to me, I don't usually, I don't cry a lot. I mean, I'm not like Matt Lauer crying and Mrs., what's her name? Mrs. Federal Reserve, who cried when Joe Biden got the Medal of Freedom from Barack Obama. Andrea Mitchell. They cried, apparently, when Obama gave Joe Biden.
Surprised him.
They cried and talked about their tears. I mean, that's another ridiculous thing. I don't do that. When I saw this movie, I couldn't help it.
Yeah.
It was just so overwhelming.
It celebrates.
So beautiful.
Just to reiterate what you said, it celebrates smart.
Yeah.
It celebrates dedication. It celebrates family. It celebrates the good things.
Without mentioning it, it celebrates an address that Dr. Martin Luther King gave to the children of Philadelphia in 67, 6 months before he died, in which he talked about how things were changing and they had to be prepared to take advantage of the change. So if you're going to be not everyone can be trees, but if you're going to be a bush, be the best bush in the world. Be the strongest tree you can. In other words, prepare yourself for what's coming. And in the movie, the actors who played the characters, who were real-life characters, prepared themselves so that when opportunity was there, they took advantage of it. And no one wanted to give them the opportunity, you know?
Yeah.
And it was just, I thought you'd love it, Jeff Carlin, because of your love for NASA. And
you and I talked about this briefly last week, but that's one of the great untold stories of American, endeavor. Yeah. And I mentioned, too, the point, but that, it's the same story behind the Apollo mission, the first man on the moon. The code that got him there was written by a brilliant woman, and few people realize that, or even that never mentioned when you talk about what humans have done, specifically Americans.
That said, I don't like to celebrate people's gender or skin. Mm-hmm. I don't believe in it. I believe in the character. That was the imprint left on me by Dr. Child. And by my teachers, so that I've always thought you shouldn't judge people, like celebrate them because of a certain genetic attribute or melanin aspect. I just don't think that that's the right thing to do. But on the other hand, you celebrate individual progress.
Well, and that's what this movie shows, is that you can do, if you can crunch the numbers and again, theoretical mathematics.
Bringing your point, yeah.
Yeah. So do you think the numbers don't care what color you are. They don't care what sex you are.
You think that the universe and the mind of God is illustrated or revealed in mathematics?
It's so far. Certainly has been. Now, the will, that's different.
The will is a different matter. Inauguration of Donald Trump, there are many challenges facing journalism and politics. Credibility, wisdom, and self-examination. And I think it's going to hurt our business and ultimately hurt our republic if we cannot re-examine the sins of the past and the sins of the future. Joining me, Scott Stannis, and Jeff Carlin now to talk about this is my friend Tom Bevan, co-founder and publisher of perhaps the most influential opinion-gathering site in America, Real Clear Politics. Good morning, Tom.
How are you?
All right.
How are you?
So we have a transition to deal with, inauguration, the John Lewis fallout. I'm going to start doing a take a liberal to lunch day just to make them feel better about what's going on. Not journalists, though, because they have their own benefits package, Prozac and so forth. And I wonder what do we have to look forward to with a presidential President Trump? Tom Bevan?
Well, I don't know. I mean, we are headed into the great unknown with Trump. It's definitely going to be a new era in a lot of ways. What we do know is that the Democrats and a lot of members of the media have lost their minds. I mean, have really he's facing a very hostile Democratic Party who's actively working to undermine his presidency before it begins. And again, we're not talking, kooky backbenchers. We're talking John Lewis, Dianne Feinstein. It's a pretty significant sort of organized effort And he's facing, obviously, if you watch his press conference the other day, he's facing a fairly hostile media, and Trump is, you know, look, he's if he's one thing, he's a fighter and called himself a counterpuncher. He's not playing by the same rules that a lot of folks are sort of used to in Washington, D.C. And so it's going to be interesting to watch how this all plays out, because I don't think we know. I don't think the Democrats are going to roll over. The media is not going to suddenly reform itself and start, you know, sort of, I think, treating him, giving him a fair shake. And I don't necessarily expect Trump to unilaterally disarm and stop tweeting and start acting, you know, the way people think he should act as president. So I think it's going to be more of the same, and I don't know where that leaves us.
Well, if he had acted like as he should have acted as a candidate, he wouldn't be president today.
No, that's exactly right. And you see,
right. Go on.
You see these efforts by even Republicans. They want to domesticate him. They want to tame him. You can't tweet. How dare you do that? You know, you can't talk about, you know, removing the press corps or not, you know, taking questions. If, you know, I mean, just all these sort of traditions and conventions, and they really want him to play by their rules, and he's just not doing it. And to your point, that's how he got to where he is. So why, if you're looking at it from Trump's perspective, why would you change? I mean, it's like the only thing that got him to where he is.
We're talking to Tom Bevin of Real Clear Politics, the founder and president of that great website that I hit every day. And with us, Jeff Carlin, of course, from WGN, and my good friend Scott Stannis, the great cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune. To Tom, so you know, Scott is one of the people that I meet secretly when we meet in cells of three, where we can actually talk policy and politics without fear before we go to room 101.
Is that right?
Yeah.
The greatest fear. Hillary's going to give us a lap dance in room 101. Hey, Tom, real quick, I mean, and this may be a totally agnostic question for a guy who's been in journalism for over 35 years, but you alluded to it for a second there, that the Trump administration, or the incoming Trump administration, talked about moving the press room out of the West Wing and moving the newsroom. And, of course, the journalists who work there, up in arms, pitched a fit, you can't do that. The Obama administration mentioned it, and they had the same response, and they backed away. But here's my question. I mean, and again, I hate to say this out loud almost.
Just say it.
But is journalism, is it passe now? Because, and I'll tell you, there's a quick background. The tweeting, the fact that he can hopscotch over the press, he can get his message out without talking to the press, which pisses the press off beyond measure.
You don't want to sound like the guy on the Trump Love channel, you know, the Trump Love Network who always comes on it.
No, but
it says the media's dead.
I was approached. We're not dead, man. This is you know, yeah. Let's just keep this between us.
Yeah, yeah, just us.
Okay. But I was approached by some politicos in Alabama to work for them, and I started to put together a strategy because the money was holy moly. I eventually obviously said no. But looking at how you can hopscotch the press is so easy now with the new technologies. Is journalism sort of like Keith Richards? It's dead. It's just no one's bothered to tell him.
Tom, save us here.
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I think we're going to find out. I mean, listen, this is something that's been going, it's been trending this way for a while. And Obama took Bush sort of did it a little bit where he was focused on trying to craft all these different segmented messages but I mean, they pretty much played by the rules. The Obama administration, the Obama White House, right, he was notorious for avoiding the White House press corps, right? He just finished, you know, he'd have all these local reporters in if he was going to do an event in, you know, North Carolina or wherever, on the campaign trail. I remember being there in Iowa and him, you know, the reporter from Entertainment Weekly flying in and getting the exclusive interview while all the, you know, wags on the press bus or suffering through this, you know, slog, got nothing, you know.
They got the Jell-O.
In many ways, yeah. I mean, so in many ways, the White House beat over the last 8 years has been no great shakes. They've sort of used them. They put up with them, but I think Trump is sort of the natural evolution of that, particularly from a Republican perspective, where they I think view not incorrectly as the press as sort of a hostile institution. And you're right. I mean, he got to where he is because of his ability to push a message and drive a message almost independent of the press corps. They had to follow him. When he would tweet, it would become news. And they're still playing that game, and they don't know how to try and flip the system back to the way it was. And my my inclination is that it's not going back to the way it was, that this is sort of the new normal. Whether it's the new normal only because Trump is so unique as a character, this is just, you know, how it is with him, and it'll revert back if we get a more conventional president back in office at some point in the future. It remains to be seen. But I think for the foreseeable future, it's journalism is not only that, Scott, but I mean, we have this whole fake news thing is just, I think has really sort of laid bare in many ways, the death of, I mean, not even death, the myth of objectivism in the press, right?
What's fake news? Is it you can keep your doctor, period? Is fake, right. I just want to know, get your phone, give your cell phone back to the 80s because the 80s are calling? Is it the Benghazi deaths were caused by that video? Is that fake news? Or is it just fake news when some wackadoodle Republican does it? That's the point. I mean, and I think that the problem with the institution of journalism is that many refuse to examine their own biases pre-Trump, the American people reacted to that bias angrily, and now because they, by virtue of the fact that they refuse to examine their pre-Trump biases, the attacks on Trump are also seen with a jaundiced eye at a time when the press must hold the president to account. It's dangerous because of the bias.
It is dangerous. Absolutely. And look, the public's faith in the media and the press has been declining over time, and I think has reached new lows. And part of the reason is this fake news thing came up right after the election as folks were trying to figure out, come up with excuses for why Trump won. They couldn't explain it or understand it. And suddenly it's, there's these kids in, Czechoslovakia or Russia or whatever are pumping out this fake news, and the public fell for it. They got duped and all that. And inadvertently, what the U.S. mainstream media did was sort of open Pandora's box and pull the veil back on the fact that, guess what? And the Washington Post, got stuck with their hand in the cookie jar with a couple of stories on, this Russians hacking this electrical power grid. It was totally not true. Right. I mean, so there were a couple of stories that came out which just reinforced the idea that the mainstream media in many ways has been producing, quote unquote, fake news, these fake hate crime hoaxes and all this stuff that's going on. This is not something that's new or even exclusive to foreign entities. The mainstream media has been doing it for a long, long time. And I think, again, that just confirmed the public's. I read something, John. There was a quote from Tripp Gabriel, who's a New York Times reporter, went back to, I think, eastern Iowa and back to a town that he had covered. And he was, it was like a coffee clash. It was like seven or eight guys sitting around. And he was talking to them about the press. And the guy said to him, and this just shows you sort of where things are at. He said, I don't even listen to, like, any of these attacks on Trump. I just assume it's a lie until it's proven otherwise.
Hey, Tom,
everything that's written negative about Trump, I assume it's a lie unless it's proven otherwise. And that's not, it's understandable why he thinks that way. But to your point, that's not a healthy thing for our democracy, our poly, that everyone just thinks the entire media, everything that's written in it, is a complete and utter lie.
Part of that is, I think, buttressed by an episode we were making fun of earlier in the podcast. It was the Matt Lauer admission that he cried like a baby when Joe Biden received the Presidential Freedom Award by
Andrea Mitchell too.
Mrs.
Alan Greenspan,
one of the best participation trophies ever.
Now, if you have people like who spin the news, and Matt Lauer is one of them, who spin it and set up the parameters, their parentheses around what's applicable, what's reasonable, and then you see him crying like a little baby about Joe Biden getting an award. I'm thinking, the whole system is going to be viewed, should be viewed in this context as, I mean, it's not good, man.
Let me ask the question then. And Tom, you'd be in the best position because you look at all these sites and you get, you obviously moderate all these different columnists and news stories. The idea of nonpartisan journalism is pretty new. I mean, it's only about 50, 60 years old. Before then, you had newspapers that, you know, you'd have like the Lansing Democrat, the Lansing Republican, the Lansing Independent.
Right.
Are we going to move back to that? I mean, I think
we are, yeah. I mean, I think we're already doing that. And by the way, this idea of nonpartisan journalism, right, is a sort of, this is a post-Watergate fiction, right? This was like, oh, we got to hold the powerful to account. Meanwhile, what we're now discovering is that over the last 30 or 40 years, it's been this sort of beltway elite cabal of folks from Washington, right, to New York City who've been basically deciding what they want to cover, how they want to cover it, and shoveling that stuff to the American people. It's why Fox News has had success. It's why even right-wing sites now, unabashedly right-wing sites like Breitbart, pro-Trump sites that are having so much success is because people, I think they do want to sort of, there's a sort of natural desire to gravitate toward like-minded thinking, and B, you know, they're probably just so sick of reading all of the, you know, Trump attacks that they feel like they're seeing in you know, the mainstream media. I think we are going back to that, back to something along those lines. And again, is it going to be good for the public, bad for the public? I mean, I'm agnostic on that. I want to see how it works out. But I do think the media landscape is changing, has been changing pretty dramatically over the last 5-10 years, and is going to continue to change in ways that I think will shock and surprise a lot of people.
One of the ways the media landscape's changed is the rise of your publication, Real Clear Politics, which aggregates columns and other opinion on all sides, all political sides. It's nonpartisan in that regard. And, you know, I tell you personally, it's great when you pick up one of my columns because the clicks go through the roof, and we're not supposed to acknowledge that clicks are important, but guess what? You know, they're important. So, but in the context of what we're talking about here, what is the future if the old mainstream media, which is what some of the right-wing talk show hosts talk about when they want you only to listen to them and not get your information elsewhere, what is the future for Real Clear as a result of this?
Yeah, I think that's a good question, something that we're pondering. I mean, I think there's a real, on one hand, there is a real opportunity for, and we're sort of a hybrid, right? We do this aggregation of other people's content, both news and commentary analysis, and obviously the election piece, but with the polling data and all that stuff.
And you have your own, you have your original
And we have
stuff
our own,
too.
Right, we have a seat in the White House press briefing room. We have a person who's covering Congress. We had two people covering the campaign. We've got elections analysts. So we're producing our own content. And I was just in D.C. last week talking with my folks and said, look, there's a real business opportunity, I think, for an outlet that will just, you know, really, really, really work scrupulously to just be fair and give the Trump administration a fair shake and not come to any of the stuff that we're currently covering with any preconceived notions about, you know, the man himself or the people he's appointing. I mean, it's amazing. You look at some of these sites now, you go to The Nation, you go to Slate Magazine, which is it's a left-wing publication, but
right.
You go there and you get served with an ad that says, please donate and help us stop Trump. You go to The Nation, it's like, you know, Steve Bannon, a bigot in the White House, please donate to us immediately so we can, you know, stop this.
Yeah, liberals don't even notice that when they're writing the general interest columns. They kind of ignore that. It's only the right wing. There seems to be a lack of intellectual honesty in the entire business.
I think that's the problem, is that advocacy journalism piece of it, right, which you go to the New York Times editorial board, and you look at the folks that are writing for that page. There's just, you know, they like to say, well, the people who are actually doing the reporting, there's a, you know, this sort of, you know, Chinese firewall and these people are completely objective. And it's like, you know, it doesn't take very long to figure out that that's not true. Everybody comes to this from with their own sort of biases. And, you know, if those biases are in constantly 100% always coming from the same direction, that is going to produce a bias in your reporting that I think folks are going to end up recognizing and realizing, especially when they have other options. And that's what happened. That's what's happened to a lot of these publications over the last 5 years.
And Tom, thanks again for joining us. Question for you. So we're going into obviously a new administration. How do you see a media changing, if it will, or kind of pivoting to just this administration versus the last administration? Is it flipped? Liberal media angry about this incoming president, or are there people out there who are genuinely happy with what's happening and are moving forward in that way? Are we going to see more of that, do you think, or is it going to be just 4 years of this president's awful, this president's awful? What do you foresee?
Well, I think we do have a fundamental disconnect that still exists, right, which is a lot of the folks who voted for Trump, who like Trump, who are excited about Trump and Trump administration are in the middle of the country, are in rural counties, are in the upper Midwest, are in the South, are in, you know, the West. Who's going to be covering the Trump administration? All these folks that are in D.C. and New York, all these sort of, you know, East Coast people who live, you know, I know they hate the word bubble.
It's true.
But there's a truth to it. And that's not even a pejorative. That's just a fact. But like, if you live in that community and you're not constantly going out and taking the pulse of, guess what? You know, like Trip Gabriel did, credit to him, go to Iowa and sit down with 7 or 8 or 10 folks and do a little mini focus group and see what they think about what's going on in Washington, D.C., what, you know, how Trump is doing. Don't just, you know, sit around with your buddies and in D.C. and talk about, you know, what an awful person this is and how he's going to be a complete failure. I mean, I do think there's this mentality that the media is not good at introspection, at reformation. And so a lot of the folks who you know, crowed in the media that Trump could never win the primary, could never win the general election, are turning right around saying he's going to be a total and complete failure as president, right?
Yeah.
And not even open to the idea that, you know what, maybe he's not. We don't know. That's the whole point. So
let's
take a deep breath. Let's cover him, you know, fairly, and let's move forward sort of with this humility about what we don't know. And that's just not something that the press is naturally inclined to do for whatever reason.
I think part of it is the social media, that reporters have one voice, or columnists with many with their columns and so forth, and then another on social media, which is even more partisan, I've found this to be. For example, the left now loves the CIA. Okay? Are you bleeping kidding me? Now the CIA and the NSA are the heroes of the left. All this stuff is weird. Here's another one. The activists, the liberals are generally activist people. They believe and faith in the action of government action. This is what informs their view. And for years they had hoped that it would be, that the leader of this big government that they want would be ideologically in tune with them. They've forgotten the Constitution and the separation of powers. And I think many have forgotten that. They've forgotten that there's this document that protects us from these swings, these wild swings in our politics to protect our individual liberty. But if you've spent your entire journalistic career either denigrating or dismissing separation of powers and the rights of the individual over the group, how else can you see this but as an attack on your entire universe? Tom Bevin.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that's I see that. I think that's generally right. I mean, there has been there's hypocrisy. Anybody who knows Washington has followed politics for any length of time knows that hypocrisy is one of the coins of the realm. The shoe is always on the other foot, whether it's the, you know, Supreme Court filibuster, you name it. I mean, just you can go back and take me about 5 minutes to come up with a dozen examples of where Democrats have said one thing when they were in power, said another thing when they weren't, vice versa. Mm-hmm. I think what's different this time a little bit is the speed with which the hypocrisy has taken place. I mean, especially with the whole, you know, the Russia thing. I mean, it was just a couple of months ago that Donald Trump, the media was up in arms. Hillary Clinton's, all the left was up in arms over the idea that Donald Trump would not vow on, you know, on the altar, you know,
concession
blood,
right.
that the election would be legitimate. You dare not question the legitimacy of the election. How dare you? That was just, like the worst thing he could say. And today we have Paul Krugman writing in the New York Times that calling Trump illegitimate, as John Lewis just did this weekend, is now a, quote, act of patriotism. It is now, you know, your moral duty and right as an American to say that Donald Trump is illegitimate. So it's a pretty stunning turnaround. And all this stuff that goes with it that you mentioned, John, the left now, the CIA, their word has to be taken as the word of God.
Right.
You know, Russia is now the enemy. We're just trying to reset with them. You know, when Obama took office. I mean, there's just so much entangled in this, and it does raise the hypocrisy meter and the cynicism meter to new levels, which is really hard to do in this day and age.
I think we should. I'm going to hand out pocket constitutions to all my colleagues so that they can read it and kind of revisit why some conservatives were concerned years ago that we were. You know, just with a pen and a phone, I could change government. Maybe they'll read it differently. Tom Bevin, Real Clear Politics. Next lunch is on me. Okay, before you begin your round of you know all the TV stations and doing your whole inauguration, Tom Bevin.
Well, now that I know thing. I can get lunch out of you with a flattering tweet, I'll be doing that more often.
Just easy. I just roll over, man. Have a cigarette now. All right, Tom. Thanks a lot.
All right.
Thank you,
thanks,
man.
Thanks, guys.
Take care.
Tom Bevin, he's
Bye.
Awesome. Thank you. See Scott you. Stannis, remember what my grandfather said about the donkeys.
Hmm.
When the politicians talk, the donkeys break wind. John Cass, Jeff Carlin, Scott Stannis, Tom Bevin. See you later, everybody. Talk next week.